Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Komen, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, man. It's good to be back, isn't it?
Yeah. We had had a week off last week.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot has gone on since that. It's been an eventful week.
Yeah.
How about for yourself? Just getting through the heat down here?
Yeah, I noticed it's been so fucking hot. I'm actually changing my underwear every day.
Right, okay.
As opposed to like once a week.
Okay, well last week you were saying, or 2 weeks ago, it was like twice a day. So
now it's like one every day.
Okay.
I've got to.
All right.
Because, you know, those guys, they need to breathe. And they can't breathe down there.
Sure.
It's so fucking hot.
Yep.
And then you take off your, and it sticks and stuff. And,
yeah. You want to stay fresh. And you shower every morning, right?
I shower every day, yes. So. Sometimes twice a day.
Okay. Well, you're staying extra clean, Manny.
Well, no, I'm just trying to cool off. I'm not really, you know, lathering up or...
Yeah, you just stand in the cold water.
Stand in the cold water, exactly.
Well, you know, that's something I wanted to mention is, like, I'm in the habit of taking a warm shower, even in the summertime. I mean, not boiling hot, but you know, I'd like to have a warm water. But in the summertime, maybe everybody does this, I don't know, but towards the end of the shower, you turn the hot water way down to where it's way cooler, and you kind of cool yourself down. Do that same thing?
I do. I've been known to do that, too.
It works. It works. To where when you don't start sweating as soon as you turn the water off.
You're sweating again. Exactly. So
I had nothing but cold water on today.
Oh, really?
Okay. I had to still wait for it to cool down.
Now.
Yeah. Oh, running out of the tap.
Running out of the tap.
Right,
cold water has to cool down.
Now, you have a beard, though, but would you shave with cold water?
Absolutely not. You got to open up the pores, man.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's the whole thing. You rinse with the cold
water. It's science.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. But, I've shaved with cold water before.
Oh, man.
You know, just about a necessity.
Sometimes on the road, I'll be shaving with cold water. And then the best part is when you're brushing your teeth in the men's room of the place you're about to go play. It's a classy feeling.
I used to watch Kevin O'Day shave dry.
No, you can't. Oh, no.
On the road.
No.
That's tough, man.
Yeah, it's tough. So, yeah, it's just the heat's been going on.
Okay.
Nothing else has been really happening. You know, I noticed that... I stay at home a lot, and I watch I YouTube a lot of things. So I was YouTubing all these old Dick Cavett shows, and Mike Douglas shows.
Yeah, those are good.
And even Carson shows from like the 60s and 70s. And these shows were a lot longer. They were like 90-minute shows and
stuff.
I remember
that.
A lot of them were, especially The Tonight Show back in the day. And I realized there were some shows I was watching, and I'm going, man... This is just really bad. You know, this is not good.
Just laying there,
there's silence. They're killing time because it's 90. And then I realized also that it's because these guests would come on, not like in today's show, the last 20, 30 years of show, talk shows, people are only going on there to promote something.
Uh-huh.
You know, back then, they would just go on the show and you would just talk.
Right.
You know, like kind of like what we're doing here.
Right.
You know, and sometimes, you know, that just doesn't work, you know, unless you have a comedian or something who's like filling up the room with jokes. But I mean, I remember I was watching this Dick Cavett with, I think it was William Holden or something. And it was just like, this is going nowhere. You know, how is he going to... And I'm sure there's a guy behind the camera going...
Stretch.
Yeah, stretch it out.
That's kind of why I'm wondering why I'm here, because I have absolutely nothing to promote.
Oh,
right.
Well, that's cool. That's all right.
Absolutely nothing to promote.
Well, there's always things to talk about, you know.
Definitely.
It was funny after a while. And then sometimes... Like, I was watching that Dick Cavett with... he always had Groucho Marx on, like, once a month, it seemed like.
Yeah.
Groucho Marx. And it would just be like, you know, it wasn't Groucho from the 30s.
It was Groucho, when he was really old.
Yeah, just really old. And Cabot's just like laughing at everything he says.
Yeah.
You know, he's drooling and Cabot's laughing.
You know, he just liked to be around the great, the greatness.
Yeah. And it was just kind of funny. So I stopped doing it. I did it for like a week and then I stopped. I can't put myself through this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. You got the gist of it.
Yeah. You know, right. It's just like, but that's what I realized. It was really nothing to promote for them. They weren't like promoting a movie or their show or their new album or something like that.
Well, some of those guys, those people, they had something successful 20, 30 years previous to that.
And they just ran with it.
They were still friends with Carson and they traveled in those circles. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess some of those people had like Vegas acts and stuff.
Yeah, but Vegas, or they would tour, the touring
some of the
restaurants,
singers,
theater restaurants.
Right, right.
And stuff
dinner like theaters. Yeah,
dinner theater,
like a Bob Crane or someone like that, you know.
Right, you know, who were, you know, doing a lot more than dinner theater on the
Beverly
road.
Playhouse.
Yeah, he was doing.
Was running his own films.
Yeah, he was running his
after,
own films.
Yeah.
Good guy, that Bob.
Sure,
Crane.
Yeah. Had, used to play out here. Have I talked about that before?
He played out here?
So when he would come to New Orleans and I think do something at the Blue Room or, you know, Beverly Playhouse used to be the supper club out in Metairie. And he was an amateur drummer, you know, semi-professional drummer. And he would go by the Jefferson Orleans North and sit in with the Pat Barbaro band. And when I got on the band, they would always talk about, oh, yeah, Bob Crane, yeah, he comes around sometimes. Yeah, he's a cool guy and everything, you know. It was like after I had been on the band, then and it came
it
out.
It all came
know.
Out. And they still haven't solved his murder.
Yeah, I thought
they figured it was his henchman. The William Dafoe character.
Right.
And what was the name of that movie? Autofocus.
Okay,
was it Autofocus?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. He was ahead of his time, really, if you think about it.
Sure,
you know,
absolutely.
When he drug women, or not even have to drug them, but just hide cameras and film.
Yeah.
Now that's done all the time, ever since the phone, you know, the phone has a camera and stuff.
Yeah.
He was way ahead of his time.
Born too early.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll miss him.
Sure.
But nothing else going on. The only thing that's, you know, really happening is what everyone's talking about the last week, over the weekend, is the assassination attempt.
Sure.
You know.
Well, I was in Hawaii since the last time we did a podcast. I left the next morning.
Uh-huh.
And I was actually laying in bed watching CNN and flipping through and watching the rally, watching this go on. And when I saw it live, it was crazy.
Oh, I didn't see it live. I just heard about it. Then I watched it. But the first thing came to my head was when it happened was the old get smart line. Missed it by that much. That's exactly what I came up when I said. And then after I watched it over and over again and they showed it was so staged. I just think it was a staged thing.
You think?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's a crazy idea if that were to possibly be true. Yeah,
if it's not a staged idea, then we're, you know, this kid really fucked up badly, because he should have just went 2 inches to the right. Now this guy's got security up the ass, man.
Well, yeah, I mean, so many things are strange about it. The fact that the kid was able to, with very little sophistication, just kind of scramble up into a spot where he had, unobstructed shot, and like that rifle he was using, you know, in the hands of anybody who halfway knows what they're doing, that's well within range, you know. But you look at that kid, he's got a certain Lee Harvey vibe to him, don't you think? You know,
his name is Crook.
Crooks, yeah.
Crooks or something like that. Yeah.
Scott Crooks or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He'll be missed, this kid, I'm sure, by some people.
Well, you look at that kid right away. We've been talking about this since we started the show. You know, these school shooters, these lone guys, they never have a girlfriend.
Right.
And I think if they had a girlfriend, I doubt he winds up on that roof. He's probably laid up on a couch somewhere hanging out with her.
But then some of these guys,
under a tree.
Some of these guys who do get girlfriends, they kill themselves because their girls tell them to.
Well,
you know, there's been cases of that too.
Well, yeah.
You know, or they can't handle it. You know, sure. Women are crazy, though, man. You know. Anyway, but yeah. So now, and now he's got this like really manicured band aid over his ear. Have you seen it?
Well, I saw it today.
Yeah, it's
square,
not messing
white.
Up with his hair or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's just, you know,
designer bandage.
Yeah. But I was thinking, you know, the blood. You know, when I give blood, it's like fucking dark, dark red, purple. That blood was not. That was like fire engine red blood. Did you notice that?
Well, it's arterial blood is different than you know, like blood coming out of your face.
Well, I just think it could have been just a one of those pellets. You know, what are those people go out and play that game?
Paint gun
thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what
okay.
was it? You know, see, the reason why I think it was staged also.
Pulling it off.
The CIA just didn't really. These agents were not
Secret Service.
Yeah, the Secret Service guys were just kind of like, get down. He wouldn't even get down because he wanted to go out
lax.
There and fist pump and all that.
Right,
kind of
right.
Stuff.
Yeah, they were saying that was so unusual that after having had this attack, he would be allowed
yeah,
to
make
have
him
his
look
face
brave
out there
and all that stuff.
I'd like to see the video played back in slow mo, like the slowest motion, and see actually when does
yeah.
his ear turn red.
Right. You know, like,
I mean, do they even have
and
that?
To the left.
They
back
have that
and
angle?
To the left. Back and to the left.
Sure, yeah. Get some Zapruder action
frame.
On it.
I'm pretty sure we can figure
you
out.
Got to stay
all
right
all
on that
questions.
Mic. You're so far
I'm pretty
off
sure
of
we can figure out the answers to those questions. I use a microphone for a living, and
yeah,
I can't figure out how to use it tonight.
Yeah, that's all right. We're going to get there.
Yeah, so anyway, I mean, now the convention's happening, and he's going to get the nomination. In the meantime, Biden sitting there going, where am I? You know,
it's tough. Biden hasn't done much to dissuade the idea that he's entering into full decrepitude.
Right. And I'm really looking forward because I think the Democratic convention is going to be in such disarray because of.
Yeah,
they don't want a lot of people. I think it's going to be like the '68 Chicago convention.
Well, certain aspects of it are setting up like
yeah.
that. Yeah, I mean they're going back to Chicago, returning to the scene of the crime.
Right. Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot like that. Man, I can smell that tequila, man. Jesus Christ!
Help yourself, Manny.
Oh, you don't want to tell? You don't say that to me.
All right,
because I'll move into your house.
I have an address for you.
All right. Okay. It's getting an invitation happening here.
Yeah. Broad and Tulane, right?
Well, so I was in Hawaii all week. They had the Big Island Jazz and Blues Festival. Gowanus returned to that for, I don't know, maybe the 10th time we've gone there. But I had a good group this time. It was like...
They were alive?
They were all alive. And the band, it was like a Cajun super group of Wayne Toups, Roddy Romero, and both Michael and David Doucet from Beau Soleil.
Yes.
And all playing together. And, and they pressed me and Doug Garrison to back them up. So got to get up on stage and play 45 minutes of music that we hadn't talked about ahead of time, hadn't prepared, but was thrilling. It was definitely flying by the seat of our pants. Man, this guy's got some horsepower between
you and
them.
Doug are very formidable rhythm sections, so I can see how that could fit real nice.
Well, yeah, it was so we did that with them, and then the next act up was Delfio Marcellus, and we backed him up too.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, it was that was nice being there. Got home yesterday. It's exhausting flight back over, and had one day today. Do this, mow my lawn. Taking off tomorrow to go the opposite direction to upstate New York, making the big time. Oh, I missed Bastille Day, I heard, while I was gone.
You didn't
gone.
Miss anything, man. That was the stupidest event ever.
Had the sweltering collection out there on Esplanade by your house, Trouble's Wives Club over there.
It was over, yeah. There was a pretty... The union was well represented there.
Yeah.
But that event itself, it's just like one block of just stupidity. It's just like, who pays to set up a tent and try to sell something? It's just like, you know, it didn't even seem French. It was, what was French about it? There was nothing French about it.
Yeah.
It just had a flag.
Right. Well, yeah, they have the French flag.
Yeah, you know, that's about it. It was like, this is it? Yeah, but I got dragged out there. But we left like after about half hour. And because I saw some people I didn't like.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I had to
okay.
leave. the usual suspects who I can't stand.
Okay.
You know.
Oh, yeah. It is a small neighborhood.
Well, no, they don't even live in the neighborhood.
Oh, okay.
They live out near in Jefferson Highway.
Come to make an appearance.
Yeah.
All right.
Well. I don't like those people.
Okay.
You know. Anyway.
Well, I saw you lost some friends this week, Manny.
I did?
While it's gone. Yeah, Richard Simmons, Dr. Ruth.
Richard Simmons was not my friend.
Oh, okay. Dr. Ruth was my friend. Somebody else.
Dr. Ruth was my friend. Robert Towne is my friend.
Okay, that's who it was.
That's about it, I think.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well,
who knows? I don't really care.
Okay.
They're all my friends.
Sure, sure. All right, well, if you don't have anything else, we can get
our guest. Yeah, let's get to our guest.
Okay, sounds good. Sounds good.
You know, I haven't come up with anything like
that's
that.
That's okay. You know? That's all right. Just nice to be back
here.
I'm just
very tired.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, I find with all the stuff going on, you know, even though it's, you know, didn't wind up being like a big tragedy with Trump getting shot, it's still a level of chaos and mayhem that no matter where you are in the political spectrum, feels exhausting, you know, like this is what's in the news now.
I think we all dodged a bullet, really, honestly, because had it been successful, what are we looking at now?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the blame game gets even deeper and deeper. And
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, hey, look, man, I'm just trying to raise my kids and play some guitar, dude.
right. So, yes, it is exhausting. I know how you feel, Manny. But we're going to forge ahead in spite of all the headwinds. Okay, so back to our guest here. Get him out. He's an award-winning guitar player, singer, songwriter, recording artist, mental health advocate, arts education activist. He's put out a bunch of records under his own name and recorded with bunch of other people. We're going to get into all that. Without further ado, the great Mr. Mike Dusan. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you so much for having me.
West Bank Mike.
Oh.
but you don't come from the West Bank.
Forever and always.
Right?
No, it's a funny story, and it's been told a million times, but I'm not sure I told it to you, so I'll go ahead and tell you and whoever's listening. I started out just sitting on guitar in different clubs, and one night Mark Stone, I was sitting with Mark Stone, and I took a solo, and he went to introduce me, and he was like, "Ladies and gentlemen," and it was a pause, and I looked at him, and I could see that the wheels were spinning, you know, and he knew my first name was Mike, but had no clue, you know, and
right.
He was like, "Ladies and gentlemen, West Bank Mike,"
okay.
You know, and I was like, you know, that son of a bitch, man, you know. Because I didn't really grow up with a lot of that West Bank, East Bank animosity, rivalry like a lot of my friends did, because I had so many friends on the West Bank that, you know, one of my earliest friends from my dad's college roommate, you know, like we were 3 months apart. He lived out on the West Bank in Tarrytown, and we were always over there. So, like, the West Bank, East Bank thing to me never really made sense.
Yeah, well, I got captured by my parents over to the West Bank when I was five, and I didn't like it the whole time I was living there.
Right. I loved it over there, man. But I lived in Algiers Point, though. You know, I was pretty close to everything I needed to be, but at the same time, I barely ever left unless I had a gig or
Algiers Point is lovely over there, you know, close to the river. The housing stock is like classic New Orleans
kind of
frame raised houses.
You're still Orleans Parish, so your kids can go to Willow.
Sure, there you go. Okay, yeah, you got Susan Cassell over there, a bunch of groovy folks over in the neighborhood. Well, so you didn't grow up on the West Bank. Tell us about where you
I grew up near UNO.
Okay.
Just right on the other side of the London Avenue Canal from UNO. And
Off Franklin Avenue or something?
Well, I'm actually off of Franklin now. I grew up off of what is now Alan Toussaint, right? Right where Alan Toussaint.
Former Robert E. Lee, yeah.
Right where Alan Toussaint splits into Leon T. Simon.
Oh, sure.
I was in one of those little side streets. Carlson Drive is...
Okay, right on.
My earliest years were on Pratt, which is one street over.
Sure,
And then Carlson is where I spent most of my childhood.
Right, that's my stomping grounds. My mother went to Gentilly Terrace Elementary School.
Oh, right on.
My grandmother still lived over there in Mirabeau, indeed. You know.
So, yeah, we love it over there. We actually just bought a house house in June, one block in from Mirabeau and St. Anthony.
Oh, nice.
So right there by Genduce's Bakery and Zimmer Seafood.
Yeah, no, that's I was all up in there my whole childhood.
Yes, indeed. Well,
that's a nice neighborhood, man.
Yes, indeed.
I like it. You can, it's quiet. You can get everywhere. So, so you grew up there. Like you had mom and dad there. Were they?
Mom and dad were there. You know.
Did your parents play music? Was that something I heard?
My dad played guitar, and at 8 years old, I told him that I wanted to play. And so he took me into his bedroom and he pulled two cases out from under the bed and he gave me one guitar and kept the other. And he said, all right, play this. And he played the lick to Layla full speed.
Okay.
And when I responded, hey, could you slow that down a little bit? That's when he said it went dark for him. He was like, oh shit, he really wants to be a musician. He really wants to do this. And it was.
Was he playing in bands?
Not at that point.
Okay,
no.
You see him around the house playing.
He played in bands in high school and whatnot. And, ended up going to work. He ended up working in the oil field, and that was pretty demanding of him of his time. But he still loved to play, and he was always buying guitars, always buying amplifiers, pissing my mom off.
Right.
But it was really cool because I was exposed to so many different instruments, and that's where I first fell in love with the SG. He had a 77 SG.
Yeah.
He got that because I dropped his friend's Les Paul Custom and chipped the neck. So he had to trade his Gretsch Country Gentleman for an SG and two other guitars.
Oh, jeez. Horse trading.
Horse trading, to cover your son's ass.
Right. So you start playing at 8
so and
you
just at eight,
you find I, other people in the neighborhood to play with? Or
I took about 8 lessons and... It was like one of those things where they wanted to teach you how to play Beethoven and see how great you could practice over the course of the week to come back and play Beethoven for them. And
where was that you were studying? It was like Filiberto's World of Strings?
Honestly, I studied, man, I love this dude, and I still see him every now and then, Mike Vila over at Todd's Music Express.
Yeah, Mike Vila. He and I went to college together.
I love Mike. Cool dude. I just wanted to learn Metallica.
Right.
And he wanted to teach me fundamentals and technique.
Okay. Right.
And so after a little while, maybe 8 or 9 lessons or so, I stopped going to lessons and I started buying magazines off the rack at the grocery store.
Porno.
Guitar. Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, what was that place?
Oh, like Guitar Player?
Frank's. What was that place called? Next to Morning Call on 17th Street in Fat City. It was like a newspaper stand.
Oh, yeah.
That's where all the kids went to get their porno. But I was buying Guitar World magazines Player magazines.
So you're who buys those magazines.
Right,
they have like transcriptions and
they
stuff
had some
in
transcriptions.
There,
like, I taught myself how to read the transcriptions, which is really easy for anybody trying to learn.
What, the tablature you're talking about?
Oh, yeah, the tablature, right?
Man, that stuff, it's like looking at Chinese for me, man.
Yeah, it was the opposite for me. It made so much more sense than the notation. And I'm at a funny place now where I can teach kids how to read music, meaning I can read it very...
Enough to explain.
Enough to explain it. But if you put a sheet of music in front of me, it would take me all day to play that song.
But you can read tablature fast like that? Like you can sight read tablature or not really?
Oh, well, it depends on the tempo of the song,
right.
I guess.
But
I'm not going to read Kirk Hammett solos.
Well, of course not. But I mean, you can process it as you read it. You can translate that to guitar kind of in real time.
I still use it to this day as kind of a cheat sheet because, some of the bands I'm in require me to learn a lot of material, recorded material.
Exactly.
And so rather than sitting there like I used to, stop, rewind, play.
Sure,
stop,
yeah,
rewind,
you
got play.
You got to use every tool
I'm
you
like,
can.
I'm like, somebody else has done this for me.
Yeah, right. You don't need to reinvent the wheel, exactly.
I pull up YouTube, and they'll have the tab at the bottom of the screen, and they'll be explaining it, and I'm like, okay, great, that's all I need to know, thanks.
Yeah, no, that's useful if you can. So you're kind of self-taught by... listening to records.
Yeah,
well,
I had a little bit of basic fundamentals, self-taught. Beyond that, and still learn from everybody I play with and hang out with. And
right.
It's well, a lifetime full of education.
We're all basically self-taught, if you know, if you really want to think about it in that way, in that we each decide what we're going to focus on, what we're going to spend time, concentrate, who we're going to seek out to, you know, study them or, you know.
That's right.
So you're gaining some facility on the instrument. Do you find people you're playing in high school? Or
yeah, so...
how old are you?
Right now?
Yeah.
44.
Okay. So
let's go back 30 years ago. I'm at a Valencia dance with...
Okay.
And this guy comes up to me. And
how did you wind up at a Valencia dance growing up living on St. Anthony?
I used to be really handsome.
Okay. I know. Some girl. There really,
I used to be really handsome.
You got recruited uptown from the lakefront?
I got recruited.
Okay,
they wanted to feel me out for a little bit and see if I belonged.
Okay.
And
you're so good looking.
You know, I was so handsome. But that's where I met Dave Pomelo.
Oh, okay.
And he walked up to me and he was like, "Hey, man, are you Mike Dusson?" I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "You play the guitar. Will you teach me?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, of course." And we just kind of talked and became fast friends that night. And
y'all are teenagers.
We were 14 years old.
14, okay.
And, I thought he was going to ask you to dance. That's what
that's what I was worried about, honestly.
You're hoping for, right?
You know.
Right. Well, where were you going to high school at this point?
I was at Jesuit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I graduated Jesuit.
All right,
in
well, that makes sense. Okay,
makes
that's
so
that was
sense.
Serious. So once you're at Jesuit, then all the Blue Bloods, you're encountering them there. And
dude,
you
I was guilty by association.
Yeah.
It was funny because after
that's upward mobility, for sure.
I was 6 years old and didn't want to go anywhere but Jesuit because I went to a football game with a neighbor friend of mine. I was like, "This is awesome."
Okay.
And after the first year, I was like, "Can I go to De La Salle, please?"
Yeah.
But anyway, Dave and I met and. We hung out all night, made fast friends, and then didn't see each other for a couple of weeks. And we ran into each other and I said, "Hey, man, you want to still learn the guitar?" And he's like, "No, I play the bass."
Oh, okay.
And I was like, "Cool, let's start a band."
Oh, wow.
And that was it. We started. He had two lessons from, is it Jim Markway?
Jim Markway, yeah.
Yeah, he had two lessons from Jim Markway, and he was already like pretty. Dave was a fast learner.
Making
like,
sense to him.
He had it.
Figuring
made
it out.
Made sense.
Right.
And I mean, you've heard him play.
Yeah, he plays great.
I mean, he was doing that.
Right.
He's a little bit more refined now, but he was doing shit like that from the time.
And that was, he went to Jesuit also?
No, he was at De La Salle.
He was at De La Salle. Okay, all right.
What was the name of your first band to go?
Oh, man. It was funny because we had a couple of bands in our high school that all had names that referenced golf, and none of us played golf. Like, but it was around a time where all these different bands had numbers in their name, like 7 Mary 3, Back 9. Back 9 was the name of our band.
Oh, okay. Back 9.
7 Mary 3. You know, you had 311.
Mandy and I are in life right now.
All these numbers,
yeah,
right?
Back nine back of nine. Life. Yeah.
The last nine holes.
Yeah.
But we had a band called Back Nine, and we had some friends that we did shows with that were, I guess, a year younger than us, and they were called Head Pro. And I don't think any of us played golf or tennis or anything. You know, it was just a weird thing that happened. But so, yeah, we started that band in high school, played all through high school.
Would y'all play like teen clubs or dances for the school or something, where we all are people's parties?
One of our first gigs was Neutral Ground Coffee House, and we kind of did an acoustic version of what we did. That's where I first sang. I was singing The Root, but we all like had harmony parts singing Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Helplessly Hoping.
Huh.
You know, stuff like
okay.
that. It was like really delving into some interesting.
And this is what, like the 90s?
This is 95, maybe.
Okay, so coffee's big, 90, too.
94,
coffee's
95.
A big thing.
Yeah, and the Neutral Ground would let
was like
anybody of any
sure.
age play.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, we're going to go book this club. We played school fairs.
Nice.
And you just did covers?
We had some originals. We also did some covers.
So you mentioned Metallica. Did you play any Metallica?
We did not play any Metallica.
Kind of a rootsy band.
We played some Hendrix, some Floyd,
CCR.
No CCR.
No, okay. I'm just picturing what you might have been doing.
It was like Hendrix
and you were
Floyd.
Singing?
No, we had this guy. At first, we were instrumental, and then we had a guy named Ted Hebler, who was a few years older than us, that we met at Plantation Coffee House, which was me and Dave's first job.
Okay.
And we met Ted, and Ted sang, and he came in and started singing, and yeah, and then it was a band. We had our friend Miles Victor come in and do some hip-hop stuff on our originals, which was really cool. I don't know why we stopped that. But after high school, I kind of fell out of it for a few years. Like, I didn't pursue it. I went to college and was lost as hell.
What'd you do in college?
Drugs.
Okay. Not in high school? Yeah. You weren't doing drugs in high school?
Well, definitely. I mean, well, you know, it was odd because I was a really great athlete up until the first time I tried psychedelics.
Yeah, and then you didn't care anymore.
Well, I went to school. It was a Sunday at Jazz Fest. Parents brought me and two friends, and we went to Jazz Fest. And right when we got in the gate, they went one way, we went the other. They said, meet us at the Radiator stage at 5 o'clock. And we were like, oh, no problem. Right when we turned left, the guy was like, dose is $5. Hey, I'll try that. And that was
the first time you took psychedelics.
It was the first time I was
at Jazz Fest.
At Jazz Fest. Oh, and then had to meet up with my parents at 5.
Oh, God.
And
I've done something like that before.
I'm writing myself out right now because they're going to listen to this, and I've never told them the story.
Oh, well, you turned out fine.
But, exactly. Sure.
Yeah, well, you know, speaking, exactly. Going back to golf for a second, one of the first times I took acid, I ended up on a golf course.
Well, that's a good place to try.
Were you actually playing golf?
No, we weren't playing golf course. But it was in the middle of the day. It was a weekday, and there were golfers.
Oh,
all
wow.
These golfers. And fortunately, my friend I took acid with, his dad was a member of this club. It's the Riviera Country Club in Palisades.
Oh, okay.
In L.A. And we found two chairs, and we just sat there in these chairs. And we were like, I guess we were on the fairway or something like that. But it was so hilarious because all of a sudden, because they have tennis courts there, it's where they filmed all the Curb Your Enthusiasm stuff.
That's
the same club.
Oh, all right. Sure, yeah.
Yeah. This guy comes up in tennis shorts and a sweater, and he goes, boys, can I help you? My name is Todd Gack or something. Todd Deck. I'm a pro here at the club. Can I help you? And we're like, what? What? And we're laughing and all that.
Sure.
But my buddy had enough energy and just enough of his brain cells to say, well, my dad's a member here. We could look it up if you want.
Right.
And he said, no problems. And then he left. And then like about 20 minutes later, we were like, let's get the fuck out of here. But then we couldn't find his car. And we're just wandering around even more. Then we end up on the Pacific Palisades, you know, off of Sunset Boulevard somewhere.
The weirdest shit happens on psychedelics.
Yeah, I know. That's so cool, though.
You find yourself in some really crazy situations.
Yeah, it would never happen.
Right.
It would never happen.
Or it might happen, but you would not have the perception to really see it for what it was.
Right.
You
exactly.
Know?
I just remember this guy's face. It looked like a barcode you see on grocery. It just looked like a barcode. It was just like, what the fuck, man?
Do you have any tattoos, Manny?
No.
I feel like that should be your first.
The guy with the barcode face.
Manny and I are too old for tattoos.
No, I can't get a
nobody
tattoo.
Our age.
Oh, my Aunt Andrea would argue.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. She just got her first in her 60s, and what I understand, she just got her second. And
my mom did the same thing too. She got tattoos.
Oh, really?
After my dad died, and she was single for a while and stuff like that, and she got some tats.
Really?
Yeah, small ones. Yeah.
Okay. Some flirty little rose or something.
Well, one was the Oakland Raider emblem on her shoulder.
Really?
She got the skull and crossbone emblem.
That's badass.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're big Raider fans.
I'm not sure if I want to meet your mom or if I don't.
She's dead.
Well, then I guess
you'll meet her one day. Maybe tonight might be the night. Who knows? I don't know.
I guess I need to watch my mouth.
Possible. Yeah. It's possible.
Yeah. But getting back, where were we before I interrupted you?
Or
the band,
my high school band, and psychedelics,
taking drugs and
right,
stuff.
Right.
Now, where did you go to college? Here?
Well, I did a semester at LSU. This is where the part of the interview gets embarrassing. I did a semester at LSU, a semester at UNO, and a semester at Delgado.
Okay.
And I accumulated 3 hours.
Nice. You were kind of working your way down.
I was not there for school, man. I grew up in a situation where it was like 401ks and benefits were real jobs and very important, and you need to do those things. And I did not relate to that at all. You know, I was always an artist. I always painted and drew and played the guitar and this and that, and I didn't fit in, but I tried my, because I thought that's what you were supposed to do,
right.
You know. And then it wasn't until I was in my 20s that, so, you know, go from high school, 18 years old, like maybe into my 22, 23, 24 years old, that's when I started like, hey, I really want to play the guitar.
Yeah.
You know, and we were at the Apple Barrel one night just hanging out with me and one of my buddies, and I didn't know what he was doing, but he went up to the band and put a $20 tip in the bucket and said, this is yours if you call that guy up to sit in and play with you. And it was Mike Hood, Sam Price, Tom Shute, Brad Helms was on guitar at the time.
Okay. I don't know,
do you remember Brad?
The name is real familiar.
Man, great, great telly player. And these guys invited me up to play because, of course, a $20 tip still is a good tip.
Sure.
And I played a song, and they were like, stay up.
Right on.
I stayed in for a few nights, and then they were like, you're coming back next week? And that was kind
of
it.
Well, that was very cool of your friend to get your foot in the door like that.
I had no idea that that's really what I wanted to do, and I had no idea that it would be that easy to do it.
Yeah.
Because the guys around the scene were just welcomed me with open arms, you know?
Yeah.
Growing up as a musician in New Orleans was a really cool thing because, you know, guys like Walter Wolfman Washington, guys that we look up to, and, you know, like, they were like, hey, well, I'm going to sit and watch you play. Sit and watch me play. And then Walter would sit with me after gigs and say, hey, look, have you tried this chord inversion for this song you played?
Oh, wow.
And he would play me back one of my originals that he had just heard for the first time with his own chord. You know, it's like,
oh, cool,
like, what the hell, man? You know,
right.
Like,
Super generous.
This is a cool, cool scene. And I'm 44 now, and now I've got a son 21 who plays the drums and a son 12 that plays the drums, and I'm watching the scene accept them and bring them in the same way, and it doesn't happen everywhere.
Are you doing drugs with them?
Yeah.
With my kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Not that aspect of relation.
No.
Well, you know, I was thinking like...
Not even smoking a little pot with them?
No.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't do it.
I like to encourage them to smoke. I'd rather them smoke pot than, drink alcohol, you know, but...
Sure, that's got to be
but
boundaries.
Drinkers.
Huh?
They're boozers instead.
Well, my 12-year-old isn't that I know of.
Yeah,
well, that's
but you know, you're 20. My other son's 21.
Yeah, and he can do what he
wants.
He's
in the scene now. He's doing his thing. Went and saw him play the other night at Tropical Isle with a bunch of the guys that I came up with.
Okay,
you know, Mike Limmler was on keys. Dave James.
Yeah, sure.
Jimmy Mesa.
Yeah, yeah.
And then my son Killian on drums. And I'm like, what is this band?
Okay, you know, like, well, cool, man.
Where did you find yourself? But
yeah, that's he's with the cats, man. Well, he'll learn a lot playing with those guys.
He's with the cats.
Well, you know, like I was just thinking about so many bands that I play with. The guys themselves are sons of musicians. And then in many cases, I'm going off to play with Brian Breniak, you know, who's drummer from Lafayette. Like, he was, while I was on the road playing with Sonny, he's telling me about growing up playing in his dad's band, and then show me a video of his own son, who's a 14-year-old, playing in his grandfather's band, you know, like with all the old guys. And, you know, that's one of the things that does happen here, you know, is you get this kind of this institutional knowledge that gets passed from, and now, you know, you have two sons who play, and you were just mentioning how, you know, we had C.R. Groover on a few weeks ago, who's a great keyboard player, and he's involved in the School of Rock, these couple, and you
what
have
a wonderful program.
Man, and so then right after he was on the podcast, I started seeing on social media how he was out doing this Colorado tour, and you were on that tour with all these kids.
It was so weird because, like, I had buddies calling me. They're like, man, what's this tour like? And I was like, well, I'm seeing my kid play, and it's all been pretty Like, they sold out Red Rocks.
Right. Crazy, man.
You know, and then they played places like the Shakedown and Vail, which is small and dingy and dirty, but loud and raucous and
right.
rock and roll. And these kids, you can see their energy and their vibe. And because I've felt that before, I knew they were feeling it.
Sure.
And I'll never forget August coming off the stage at the Shakedown the night after Red Rocks. And I said, man, you crushed it tonight. And he looked at me straight in the eye and he says, Dad, I was really feeling it. And I was like, because this is the place you feel those things. You know,
yeah.
It's like the small clubs that are packed with the great sound and everything's loud.
Right.
You know, that's rock and roll, you know.
They're all definitely ruined.
it's something else. He's 12 and he's the youngest one in the School of Rock, and it was interesting watching him be on tour with a bunch of kids who are 16, 17, 18 years old and the dynamic between the two. But I like to say my wife and I did a real good job of raising our children not to be afraid of anything.
Yeah,
you know, it's
sure.
like And we don't hide anything from them. You know, everything that we support, we make sure that they know that we support it.
Yeah.
And not that everything that we do is okay for a 12-year-old to do, but at the same time,
yes.
But at the same time, just because it's not okay for a 12-year-old to do doesn't mean it's not okay for consenting adults to
yes,
do and this
absolutely.
And that and the other
like
thing.
Many things in life, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
just I'm just trying to raise my children without stigmas.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, with honesty.
Or
yeah,
fear,
yeah, yeah.
you know.
Well, man, I want to get back into this and
yeah.
talk about, you know, your post-teenage life, but seems like a good time
so
to
you
take
have
a little
good
break.
Principles, it sounds
yes,
like.
Yes, yes.
You know?
Yeah, we're just doing the best we can out
yeah,
here.
See, more. My principles have always been built on my resentments.
Yes.
So,
I tried that once.
Yeah.
It didn't work
it
out.
It still works for me.
It still works for you. That's
yeah.
good. It didn't
so
work for
far.
Me.
Yeah.
It didn't work for me.
You know, but anyway, yeah, that's me. The way I look at it.
Well, you want to tell them what's going on?
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're going to take a break right now.
That
is it that time?
Great.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Time.
Is that what you're...
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
I thought you were going to stretch it.
No.
I thought you were going to stretch it out some more.
Oh, no.
No. Okay. We take a break. You know the drill.
Know the drill.
You can maybe have some of your tequila while you're there.
I might give some of it away at this point.
Okay.
Good. But we'll be right back.
It's hard for me to sit here and watch you do the things you do. It's hard for me to sit here and watch you struggle on through. It's hard for me to sit here and watch you hurt the ones you love. It's hard for me to sit here. It's hard for you to realize the way you're living's killing you. It's hard for you to realize that your spirit can't shine through. It's hard for you to realize definition of a friend. It's hard for you to realize it ain't all about. To shine, not so easy being free. It's easy to escape the pain, not so easy to feel. It's easy telling distant lies, not so easy telling me. It's hard to lose a friend who can't see. It ain't all about.
And we're back. Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet.
Mm-hmm.
I am Renee Coman, back
yes.
with our guest, Mr. Mike Dusan. Now, Mike, I know you have been doing your homework. Your guy likes to go in prepared. You have been listening to the podcast, so you must be familiar with our model that we've been using for several years here. It's
basically I just had to wrap my head around Manny Chevrolet.
Listener support.
I know your style, Renee.
Well,
I had to wrap my head around
this
guy.
But don't step on my line. I'm just you don't need to respond.
I'm sorry.
That we're a listener support model, and we have Venmo and PayPal links there listed in the show notes of every show and the Facebook page. And you know, if you're enjoying the show, listening to it, you can jump in and support us, buy a round of cocktails, pay for some notebooks, for some podcast hosting services. Those things aren't cheap. And to that end, we want to thank Mr. Mark Redding, who has sent us a very generous stipend of support through the Venmo. That's the one the young people seem to use. Then we do have the PayPal, and we also have Trouble Men podcast t-shirts that are available from Print on Demand. What do we call that, Manny? POD.
POD, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
Very familiar with POD.
Right, right. And, well, yeah, you're in the publishing business.
That's right.
So, and we have those, the link for those t-shirts also in the show notes.
Piece of dirt.
Okay. Also, follow us on social media, Instagram and Facebook, and subscribe to the podcast.
We're on all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really? Now, who coordinates it? Who puts stuff out on Instagram? You do?
I do. I do everything. Yeah.
Now, where would I see that?
On Instagram, if you open the Instagram app, or you would have to maybe create an Instagram profile.
Oh, I don't want to do that.
You'd have to get rid of the flip phone.
I think your sister has one.
My sister?
Your sister has a profile. She'll I think she may be Raider Chick something something. She will chime in and like our Instagram posts.
Oh.
But anyway, so yes, subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to us. Give us 5 stars. Helps us a lot. Cost you nothing.
I tried Instagram years ago. Uh-huh. I'm still waiting for my Coke.
Yeah. Sure.
Still
yeah.
waiting.
Oh, yeah, is that yeah, like, yeah. Like Instacart?
It's an early version. It had some bugs in it. Yeah, yeah.
Would you like somebody to pick out your produce for you? Somebody, a total stranger? See, I couldn't.
Yeah, I've never done the like go shop for my groceries type thing.
I don't want to do that.
I've tried like the Imperfect Foods, where they ship you a box of
stuff
that. You know, maybe it's like a sweet potato with a left arm or something.
Uh-huh. How'd you like, find that?
I don't know.
It's a lot to keep up with.
The same way you found the ladies' room. You just went to.
Sure.
Hey, look, man.
The nation should know that you use the ladies' room here at the Klempire.
Bathrooms are bathrooms, Manny. It's 2024.
Well, you're definitely in the bathroom here. This whole place is a toilet.
You know? Well, when you said it the first time, you had a funny joke. You said, look, we're both going to do the same thing in there, right?
That's it. That's it.
Which is?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
which is douche?
The first thing
cocaine.
I thought when I walked in that bathroom is how much cocaine has been done in here.
Oh, holy moly. No kidding, man.
As all the years that this place has been alive.
Oh, God. It's incalculable.
You know,
yeah.
Because, you know.
Now, have you ever done it here?
I don't remember.
I don't think I have.
The last time I was here was 20 years ago, and I got kicked out.
Okay, really? For what?
So probably doing cocaine in the ladies' room. Okay. The ladies' room. No, honestly, I do remember why I got kicked out, because I was on a roll about how I didn't like the t-shirt design that they had hanging up for sale like that.
You got a little bit too invested.
Man, that's a terrible t-shirt design. And I guess the bartender overheard me talking to a friend, and she had a problem with me saying she didn't like the t-shirt design, evidently because I think she designed it.
Sure, yeah,
and,
I can see that.
You know, it was a pretty innocent way to get kicked out.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, you're back now. They forgive
you. I'm back now. Yeah. My pictures.
Let bygones be
my picture is not on the
same t-shirt still hanging.
My picture's not on the wall.
The same design.
It looks a lot better now.
Okay.
What can I say?
You've matured into it.
Yeah.
Let's get back to our guest, Mr. Mike Dusan. Now, Mike, so you're talking about how you were first starting to get into the professional scene here, going playing at the Apple Barrel, meeting a bunch of guys in the working musicians here in town.
Right.
So the first time that I met you, became aware of you, was through Lynn Drury.
That
was
my
early days of me playing in her band. She had a series where she had different artists come on and play with the band, and
right.
You were one of the early ones at the Ace Hotel.
That's right. That's right.
So that was your maybe like you'd been playing 5 or 6 years at that point or something.
Well, man, that wasn't really that was to me, that seems like it was just before the pandemic. But then again, I don't know what time is since the pandemic.
Yeah, I think it was longer than that. But anyway, you were an established artist by that time.
I guess it was around 2004 that I started the band.
Okay.
And the band really wasn't a band. It was me and a rotating cast of characters. It had different periods where we had solid cast members that were there every night all the time. But it started out, the way it started out is after Mark Stone called me West Bank Mike. Mm-hmm. You know, that was in my brain.
Okay.
A couple nights later, I'm playing with Juice. Juice was one of the only bands that learned my original music.
Okay. And so, were you in that band?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but I would show, I'd befriended them. Uh-huh. And every Wednesday night they played at Bank Street, and they would have me up, and instead of me sitting in on their songs, they would play my songs. They had learned a handful of my originals.
Oh, cool.
And it was a really cool thing, man. It was real, one of my first like opportunities to play my music in front of anybody, you know. And the owner came up, Maria at the time owned Bank Street Bar, and she was lovely and still is lovely. Came up and said, "Hey, I love your sound. Can your band play tomorrow night?" And I said, "Absolutely."
Oh, cool.
I didn't have a band.
Yeah.
You know, and I got on the phone at 4 a.m. and until 4 p.m., that's when I had my band, was 12 hours later. And it was, I had Mike Hood on piano, Mark Adams on Nord playing organ.
Oh, wow. Two keyboard players.
Two keyboard players right off the bat. Had Thomas McDonald on bass, Brad Helms on second guitar, and then Carlo Nuccio was on drums.
Oh, wow.
This is my first gig as West Bank Mike.
Okay.
And that's the name of the band?
West Bank Mike and the Fisher Project.
Oh, okay.
Because
Fisher Project.
Because when Maria asked me if my band could play, I said, "Yeah, absolutely." She says, "Cool, what's the name of your band?" And I was like, "Oh, shit." You know, like, because how often or how long does it take you
to come up with a band name,
you know?
Huh?
And I thought West Bank Mike, and I saw Soul Project 10 p.m. every Thursday, and West Bank Mike and the Fisher Project. It wouldn't fly in 2024.
You don't think so?
I don't think so,
It would be offending sensitivities to name your band after a housing project.
People would come see me at the Old Point and be disappointed because they thought I was a rap group.
Yeah.
I mean, for real. You know, it was... but look, it was a fun time in life. I started the band, and because it was a rotating cast of characters, I was able to like really get to know a bunch of different musicians.
Okay.
And so like Ryan Clute was one of the bass players. Scott Jackson was one of the bass players. Sam Price played bass with us. Mm-hmm. You know, we had...
So you get introduced to all of their different scenes, too.
Well, you got introduced to all their different scenes, all the different styles, you know, like, and everybody else, the way they played something kind of influenced the way you hear, "Oh, shit, I never heard it like that before," you know? And so a song might take a left turn once you play with a certain player and be like, "Hey, this is where this is supposed to be the whole time."
Okay.
So it was a really cool thing. It was difficult, like coordinating everything and teaching everybody the music, but we spent most of our time on stage learning the songs, and with the weekly gigs that we ended up getting, got tight as hell, you know? And then at the end of that year, started recording a record, you know?
So, how much money did Carlo borrow from you?
Carlo told me when I called him this, and this was hilarious because he was my seventh call, because at the time I didn't even know who Carlo was. You know, like
year was this?
This was 2004. And
he was in bad shape.
Anyway. He was deep into it.
He was a lot of people's seventh call.
I had heard
2004. As good as he was,
I had heard his name, and I knew that like maybe during or just prior to that he had been working with Lemmy Lou Harris or
we both played on her record.
You're right. And so when I got Carlo's name from Kevin O'Day and called Carlo, and he says, "I need $75 and I said,
"Now, right?"
I said, "You got it
in the next 20 minutes."
Yeah, in the next 20 minutes.
The funny thing about that first gig is that when I between the pay Maria gave us and the tips, I split up everything, and it was $75 a man. And somehow I ended up giving him only $70. And yeah, I heard about it. I heard about it.
Wow, one of the few people that came out on the long end of the stick here. Yeah. Mike, you know, good for you, man. He's still in the hole.
He got a 75. He got a 75.
Okay, good. I'm sure he deserved it. I'm sure your value.
It was the best first gig I think anybody could have ever had with that back line, man. It was amazing. It was really cool.
So you start playing more gigs.
Start doing the thing. A couple weeks later, Eric Lindell took. I was sitting in with Eric Lindell a lot, and he took me out on a boat, telling me that it was a gig on a boat, but we were just going shrimping. And
all right, give you some life advice. I read this.
Yeah. It was like, man, you just need to quit your job and play music. And I was like, you could have told me this like in the neighborhood, but
sure,
it's much cooler that I'm going home with 40 pounds of shrimp, you know? And 2 weeks after that, I quit my job and just started playing music. That was where I needed to be, you know? My dad thought it was the worst decision. He told me, he was like, Mike, I do not support this decision. And then he came out and saw me play. And basically said, Mike, I support this decision.
Oh, well, that's nice. That's nice. And how old were you at this point?
I'd have been 24.
Okay.
Yeah, at that point.
All right. Well, you still got some years on the tire to figure out if this is going to work or not. But you don't want to wait too late, to make that kind of decision, you know?
So, yeah, we did the West Bank Mike thing for about 7 years, six, 7 years. And then I took a brief sabbatical. We got full custody of my oldest two children.
Okay.
And I got a job, moved to Denham Springs, and was kind of out of music scene. Because even though Baton Rouge isn't that far, it's
a different world.
It's far enough. Right. And I didn't really immerse myself into that scene at all. But I would come back here and play with Dave Jordan. And at that point, he was starting the NIA, you know, and so I started out as a rotating cast of the NIA, and then eventually was a full-fledged member and left the job world, moved back to New Orleans, and just immersed myself right back into the music.
Nice. And along the way, you make a record with Dave Jordan. You make a second record of your own stuff, right?
Right. And I started that second record in 2009, and that's right when we got. And that band was great. We had been for about 2 years. It was me and Jimmy Carpenter, Mike Barris, and Scott Jackson.
Oh, cool.
When it first started, it was Jimmy Carpenter and one of my favorite baritone sax players, tenor sax players,
Jason Mingledorf, Roger Lewis.
No, he played with
Scatman Crothers.
Man, why am I? Man, this is so embarrassing because I know there's an opportunity that he's going to hear this and be like, "That son of a bitch forgot my name."
Cut this whole part out.
Bob Crane.
Derek Houston. I don't know how I could.
Okay, all right.
I've had a brain fart. It must be the That's size right. of the tequila this bartender poured.
Yeah.
But Derek, sure. It was Derek Houston and Jimmy together at first.
Oh, cool.
And that was shortly after that. Derek got the call up to go on tour with somebody, and it just ended up the four of us. And I'll tell you what, it was the tightest little quartet, man. We had a great time playing. Started recording the record, got all the bass tracks laid down, all the drums and everything. And but when we got full custody of the kids, that's when I got the job. We moved away for a little while, and that record got put on hiatus in 2014. Finished that record, which was right around the time where I was definitely a full-fledged member of the NIA at that time. But it took 5 years to get that record done just because of circumstance.
Sure.
You know.
Right on.
The kids always came first, whether or not they believe that.
Right. Well, you know, that's like when Katrina happened, I had a couple of young kids, and it was such a challenge to know what to do, what should we do? And I thought, just figure out something where they'll be okay and the rest of it will fall in
That's
place.
It.
And that was
it.
It simplified my priorities, you know.
Now, the balance definitely shifted over the years. You know, we tried our best, you know, to do, you know, it was just tough, you know, being on the road and trying to be a parent while you're on the road and you have your spouse at home taking care of everything. It turned into a situation where we're living two separate lives.
Yeah.
You know, and it came to a head at one point when we realized, like, they need to be experiencing all of the things I'm experiencing.
Hmm.
And that's when I left Dave's band and started travel. I tore a page out of Spencer Boren's book and just started taking the family on the road.
Really? Okay.
And we started out like 16 days, and then the next summer was 39 days, and it was 60.
And where would y'all go?
All four corners of the U.S., man.
Really? How'd you book all these dates?
It was kind of serendipitous how it worked out. It was like one of the silver linings of the pandemic. I had just released Yesterday's Troubles, which was a record I put out in 2019. We had a bunch of good backing behind it, and the pandemic hit, festivals canceled, tours canceled, the whole nine yards. And so Maggie and I talked, and we bought a pop-up camper, and we put out on Facebook, hey, we'll play your backyard, we'll play your campground, we'll play your winery, we'll play wherever. And I had, you know...
And it's just you?
Just me and my son. Well, and me and what eventually my son August would join me on hand drums.
Okay.
So we were doing these solo tours that he eventually made duo tours. And so we'd book the weekends and then go to national parks on our days off and just travel the country. We've seen Mount Rainier. We've
nice,
seen
man.
The Redwoods, you know,
that was
been to Maine.
Nice.
You know, just,
you had the two sons out with you at that time.
No, at that time it was just the youngest one, Killian and Alexia, my oldest ones, you know, they were already, you know, working their jobs at
Gree-Gree
like that. And, it was hard for them to get off, but they've joined us on tour. They just did the Colorado run with us, the older kids,
yeah.
And they just did Paradise with us. And latest Paradise run, I had both my sons on drums, playing double drums, which was pretty cool, man.
Now, so back to this kind of brings us up to the intersection of the School of Rock. How involved in that are you?
Well, I'll tell you to this way, and I reminded CR of this yesterday on his sixth anniversary, or 2 days ago. Sunday, they had a big show with 11 house bands from School of Rocks all over the country.
Uh-huh.
And it was an all-day affair.
That was in Colorado?
No, that was here.
Here,
in New
okay.
Orleans,
oh, that was at
just this past
Broadside
Sunday. At Zony Mash.
Zony Mash, yes, sorry.
And so I talked to CR, and I was like, hey, because when CR first was about to open the school, I got a phone call from him. He says, hey, man, how would you like to manage the School of Rock? And I said, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. You know, I typically don't like other people's children unless I like the parents.
Okay.
You know, I say that kind of jokingly, man.
Sure.
I teach kids and... but at the same time, it's like when he started that 6 years ago, I was still very much on the road all the time and didn't really even want to give that a thought as to how that would work. It just wasn't in my my sight, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it's a good thing because the people that are involved are great for the job. They're great with the kids. The kids are really thriving in that environment. It's just a really cool thing.
Yeah,
it's a tremendous
program.
To witness and watch my kid be a part of.
So your son's involved in it.
Yeah, so okay. August, the youngest one, he's 12 now. He started playing on the road with me when he was 5.
Uh-huh.
He had been going to the workshops with Johnny V and Deb
from
the time he was 3.
Tipitina, sure.
And that's really kind of when it was like, okay, this kid's got something, you know. And so every time I had the opportunity, I'd put him behind a set. He'd be playing with Charlie Wooten, Jamal Watts, and you know, whatever. But he never really had self-motivation to practice. until he was playing with his peers at School of Rock. It was a different ball game. It's like, I don't want to let these kids down. These are my friends, you know? And he started practicing, and it was really great for him because it gave him somebody else to teach him. You know how kids are with parents. They're like, they don't listen.
Yes.
You know, but
because it was easier for him to let you down.
Well, look, believe it or not, Manny, if I were to have this like life lesson I wanted to teach my child and I would tell that to him, he would like roll his eyes and or like, you know, go do something else. If Manny Chevrolet were to give August that same piece of advice, he would probably hang on it. Like, right, it was like, oh my like, God, what
stop
is
stop jerking off right, the Bible?
Well,
well, yeah, you gotta be careful.
We'd have to teach him what the Bible was first. But, half kidding,
right.
Anyway,
sure. No, it's the peer-to-peer learning is powerful. You know, like Ben Franklin, it has half great teachers and half flunky teachers, but the real strength of the program is the other students.
So that's how they're at. My wife's a first grade teacher, and that's how they're actually setting up their classrooms now, where they have these like little pods where they're putting two of the higher learners with two of the learners who might be having difficulties.
Okay.
And they're putting them together to where the ones with difficulties are learning from the kids who get it quicker or differently.
Right.
You know, so it's... Yeah,
I could see that. I could actually see that working.
Yeah, kids are amazing teachers, and they don't even know it.
Right. Well, anytime you teach, you have to really examine it in a way that you maybe didn't have to up till that point. You gain a deeper understanding of it, of something that you thought you understood to begin with, but just approaching it from the other side.
You saying that, going back to earlier in our conversation about Dave Pomerleau, me meeting him early, I had already played the guitar for 6 years. When we were 16, so fast forward to, you know, 2 years after Dave had been playing the bass and 8 years after I had started playing the guitar, we're sitting in his bedroom one day and just kind of jamming, and he did something and explained it in a manner that it was like the light bulb went off.
Yeah.
He had been doing this for 2 years.
So much good work. Like I said, you know, your mental health work, you know, it's, I don't know if you want to talk about that at all. We're just kind of...
Very briefly, if I could promote something. We're putting on. So the Brett Thomas Doucen Foundation was founded... close to 10 years ago after I lost my youngest brother to suicide. And we all gathered up and we had this idea to throw a party and raise money and donate to Musicians Clinic. Mm. And then it was like, no, let's not throw a party. Let's throw parties all the time for many years to come. And they're not all parties. Some of them, like we got coming up, this is called Music for Mental Health. And it's... Thursday, September 5th, and it's going to be at the Broadside. Nice. And basically, it's a panel of it's either going to be four or five musicians. Haven't solidified a fifth yet, and if we don't solidify a fifth, it'll be four musicians. And basically, what we do is we promote music as a source of therapy and not just entertainment. Mm. So we get musicians. We have a whole... interview segment on our website where we interview other musicians like George Porter or Galactic about how music has helped them through tough times, stuff like that. And so we want to keep that on the forefront, that music is a very saving grace in a lot of situations, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's all based off of music, but it's to raise awareness and funding for mental health programs throughout not just the New Orleans community, but nationwide through the National Alliance on Suicide Prevention and whatnot. So the next event for that is, like I said, September 5th, Thursday. It's a great thing.
Outstanding.
And if the next gig I think I have in town is with the Nudes, the Desert Nudes.
Oh, you playing know that those band? Guys.
I know. I'm like the fifth Beatle of the Desert Nudes.
Cool. That's
you know?
Cool. That's a good group to work your way into.
Which is weird
into.
Because there's only three people, and when I join, I'm the fourth. But
right.
But it's always fun. It's a different style of music that I really just love playing with those guys.
I love Andre and Dave,
August Godfathers.
Right.
He has two Godfathers.
Okay, there you go. It's keeping it all in the family.
JP is a beautiful soul. So nice. That'll be the 26th of this month at Maple Leaf. And then Ico All-Stars on August 3rd at Tips.
Yeah, the Ico All-Stars. What a great band. Reggie Scanlon, Eddie Christmas. Who else is in that band?
It's Billy Iuso, Michael Fouquet.
Billy.
Sometimes it's C.R. Groover. Sometimes it's Papa John Groves.
What a cool band. Any band you get to be with Reggie Scanlon in is a cool band.
Reggie is a freight train, man. He locks in on the groove and
salt
goes.
Of the earth. Yeah,
lots
yeah,
of fun,
yeah,
man. Yeah. And a beautiful human being.
Yeah. He comes up in many, many of these podcasts. Well, one more thing I wanted to mention that I dug is you had this item for sale on your website, and it's a sticker that says, "I bought Mike Dusan a tank of gas."
Did you hear stories about this?
And it costs $100. And if you buy Mike Dusan a tank of gas, he'll send you a sticker that says you did. I thought that was brilliant.
So the brilliance is in the idiocy of the whole thing, because I was stealing an idea from my friends in Greasy Alice.
Okay.
Who are local. They're very much similar to like what I would think of, like if the Rolling Stones was a bar band.
Okay,
like this is Greasy Alice. They are rock and roll, and they don't give a shit. But anyway, they went on tour and they had a bumper sticker that said, "I bought Greasy Alice a gallon of gas," and they would sell it for whatever the gallon cost in whatever town they were paying, plus the cost of the sticker, you know?
Yeah, no, tank of gas. And
so I'm like, dude, that's a great idea. I'm going to do that. And so I typed in all the details on the online sticker making company website and da-da-da, whatever. And they get delivered. And I'm like, oh, man, these are great. Check these out, Maggie. And she's like, it says I bought the Dusan's a tank of gas. And I was like, oh, shit, I guess that means we need to sell them for $100
then. Yeah,
she's
yeah.
like, you're never going to sell those, da-da-da, whatever. It was the first two pieces of merch to be bought on that tour, and we had to order more.
That's a genius idea, man.
So it was like we saw the genius in it. There are people out there that have the money that want to support live music,
bands being out on the road,
and so don't be afraid to do something crazy like that. Is what I've learned.
No.
You know, charge $100 for a bumper sticker. You know, Mike's Mid City Grill used to charge $100 for a hamburger. You know,
sure.
And they'd give you a bottle of Dawn P with it,
Right. I like it, Mike. That's some real grassroots genius there. Well. Thank you so much for coming on, Mike. Thanks for all the work that you do, all the work you do for the community, for the arts and mental health and all your rocking and rolling out there.
Yeah, you're right. Thanks for having me, Renee. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Manny.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
And as always, on the Troubled Men podcast, we like to say trouble never ends.
But the struggle continues. Good night.
Good night.
My darling, dream straight on through the night. Sleep deep into the morning, like tomorrow's looking bright. Let us turn our wounds to wisdom. Let us learn from our mistakes. Let us love like there's no other. In our city by the lake. It's been a long time. to carry us home. We'll surround ourselves with family. We'll take strolls through City Park, across the river on the ferry, disappear into the dark. Darling, and all your dreams will soon come true. We'll be sleeping in New Orleans, and our souls will be renewed.